You think after two straight months of Jurassic Park content, we'd be done with people stuck on an island with dinosaurs. But no, we found a way to keep it going.
We found life finds a way.
And so did we.
Star Wars. Transformers. Godzilla. Animation. Whatever else. Rebels. Robots. And etc.
Welcome to another installment. 2 years dormant, just like the volcanoes in this cartoon. It's another installment of Hotbot Summer. We're talking Transformers G1 today. It's Rebels and Robots, episode 85.
We're that much closer to retirement.
Is that the year the episode of Transformers G1 that we watched today came out? I'm going to figure that out real quick.
That's a good question that I don't know.
Anyways, I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And this is our bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and
Transformers.
Transformers is the big one today, and whatever else we both want to talk about. And we will be talking about Transformers, informally known as Transformers G1, the original cartoon, and an episode specifically from that called...
Two episodes.
Island of the Dinobots?
Dinobot Island.
Dinobot Island.
And part two.
Yes. And before we get to that, as always, we have news, woos, and boos. And I just remembered, I have a first ever, I'm bringing a headline specifically because I wanted to get booed. Because this is a terrible headline as far as like... newsworthiness goes. This is from the Hollywood Reporter as well. Star Wars A New Hope will return to theaters in 2027.
That's it. That's the episode.
I hit the table and it made the recorder stop. Which
that's it. That's the episode.
Last
guys.
Week we stopped the recording because of audio issues and I forgot to edit that part out of like when the audio went bad when we resumed. So that's just in last week's episode. Anyways, it's 2025 and they're advertising the fact that this movie, this old movie that gets re-released all the time, it's not
all the time
a big deal. Like, is getting shown in theaters in 2 years? Boo. Yeah, news, woos, yeah. And boos? That's a boo. I hate it. What kind of content do you have this week for news?
Well, I'm perusing Twitter for any kind of crumb. Now, take this with a grain of salt because this movie has yet to really exist outside of an announcement. Here's some of the alleged cast members for Star Wars Starfighter. Ryan Gosling is the main character. Mia Goth.
I know that name, but you have to remind me who that is.
She's Pearl X.
Oh, yeah.
Horror actress. She's going to be in the new werewolf movie by the guy who just did the vampire movie over Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I'm blanking on the director's name. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
And apparently, Matt Smith has been cast as the villain for this film.
I don't know who that is.
The 11th Doctor in Doctor Who.
So Matt Smith.
Matt Smith, yes.
Okay.
And apparently, he had a role in Rise of Skywalker as a young Palpatine, but it was cut.
Yeah, I forgot about that. We haven't really heard much about that, like what that actually looked like. Well, Mia Goth, for having starred in one of the biggest horror trilogies of the last couple of years, has not done much else.
No.
Interesting. She's been in quite a few like horror slash like survival movies, but she is in... Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein and Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey. So she doesn't act a lot, but the things she's in are very notable. It's interesting. Matt Smith, wow, he is a real toss-up. He's obviously incredible as the 11th Doctor Who, the one with the bow tie one and the one who wore the fez, if you don't know. I don't know if I've ever seen him good in anything else, though. I've seen him in other stuff, and he's kind of hit or miss.
He's in House of the Dragon.
Oh, how is he in that? The Game of Thrones prequel series?
I just hate that show because... so here's the thing.
He's also the villain in Morbius. So,
House of the Dragon is... here, hold on.
I need to show you this visibly. All right.
This is going
to
be very dramatic. Rachel's on the other side of the apartment now. Or is she just getting a book? Okay, she's gone to fetch a prop. I thought you went over there to yell. Matt Smith, decent in Last Night at Soho. In Soho. Okay, so she's... Which book in the series is this?
My headphones back on. So I've gotten a book by George R. R. Martin called Fire and Blood. Fire and Blood is a book that is written like a history textbook.
Oh, it says 300 years before Game of Thrones on the cover.
Dragons rule the...
Yeah.
This is a part one.
I see.
So Fire and Blood and Fire and Blood 2, we're probably not going to get it. Are in-universe history books.
Okay.
This is the first, like, half of the Targaryen dynasty. House of the Dragon is based on maybe 100 pages in this tome. This is about, what do you say, 3 inches, 2.5 inches book?
Yeah.
And it's very clear because it's written like a history book. And so House of the Dragon is the show adaptation of it. I can't stand the show because they are just writing their own stuff at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Even George R. R. Martin has come out and been really displeased with the things they are adding. Now, when you have 100 pages and you're trying to milk out as much money as possible for it, you're going to have to add things. Just the decisions they're making are just absolutely stupid. And I think they're wasting... I think the actors are doing the best they can. I just think it's a mess. I think he's okay in it, but they're just changing a lot of stuff for views. It's shock value stuff, and it's dumb.
Not that Game of Thrones is really a common interest, because I've never watched Game of Thrones or read Game of Thrones, but I did see a headline the other day I meant to ask you about. Are they making a prequel to House of the Dragon?
They have tossed up a bunch of prequel ideas, but they are doing Night of the Seven Kingdoms, which is a short story that George R. R. Martin did write.
Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, are they making a prequel to the prequel? Because that's the headline that I saw.
No, so House of the Dragon takes place about... I don't know how much time it takes. Place maybe 100 years before the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
A Night of the Seven Kingdoms takes place sometime after. So it is a prequel to Game of Thrones, but like after.
I see.
I believe some of its characters overlap as some elderly characters in Game of Thrones. But there have been multiple talks of like, oh, we'll do Aegon's Conquest. We'll
see, that's what I'm seeing here.
They keep saying that they're going to do it because everyone wants Henry Cavill.
I see.
I don't think he fits it.
But so would that be before House of the Dragon, though?
Yeah, so that would be a prequel to the prequel. That is basically like the beginning of the Targaryens in Westeros.
Yeah. I meant to say up top that this is going to be a very meandering episode. We were so hamstrung by this, having to cover
two movies
an episode.
We didn't want to watch Tales of the Underworld yet.
Yeah. So this is a kind of a breezy, fun episode just to talk about whatever.
It's going
to
be a shorter episode.
I mean, we really, ever since April, we've been very structured because of...
We've had to.
Andor, and then 2 months of... and we were covering 3 episodes of Andor a week, and then 1 or 2 movies a week for the last 2 months. So we haven't had just simple stuff to cover. Covering poorly animated children's science fiction is the root of this podcast.
We're not going to cover Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, because there's not enough time for me to complain about it. this tweet is going back to the Star Wars New Hope re-release and says, will it be the 1997 special edition or...
Oh, that's a great question.
...Lucas's original cut? So
it's almost certainly going to be the special edition. I can't imagine.
It's got to be. You think they're really going to chance Han not shooting first in today's Star Wars fans?
Though I think that they did like screen the original edit recently, and people have said that it just looks really bad. but partially because of it just has not been preserved well. because it's not like the official version that George kept in good condition, but also because I think people have just become so used to the special editions. Because while, yes, absolutely 100% valid, there's a lot of stuff to complain about with the special edition, and you can still complain about this, but like there's a lot of like small tweaks that are really subtle that have helped keep Star Wars. Some people will argue it makes it look like how you saw it as a kid. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard argument, because on the one hand, they are like what you would call like quality of life updates for video games. Like,
updates.
Like they really do improve the movie, but that's the argument of should we be improving old films? Like, on the one hand, though, you do kind of want to see it how it was originally mm-hmm. seen, even if it doesn't seem as good by today's standards. That is the movie that existed, mm-hmm. and I want to be able to see it. So there's arguments back and forth onto whether you actually do Star Wars fans actually want the original mm-hmm. cut, or is it just kind of become this thing that everyone says to try to sound like a true fan? I can see both sides. I think as I really appreciate the progress of film, and I don't think movies being flawed is a bad thing. In fact, it's a good thing. Like, movies are made by people, so of course they have flaws. I would probably prefer that. I'm fine with both. I think it's a bummer that we don't have easy access to a high quality good version of the original edit. Though there are some elements of the special editions, the small tweaks, the small things that are do make it more engaging, they kind of fill in some gaps visually. Like there's a couple of scenes where the Millennium Falcon is kind of just a dot in the distance, and they went back and recreated those scenes, and you get to see the Millennium Factory taking off from the hangar in Mos Eisley. So I don't think George had no right to make the special editions. I do just certainly wish there was someone there reining him in on some of the choices. But it was also, as much as CGI has done a lot of bad stuff for the film industry, but also CGI has allowed some absolutely incredible visions to come to life. Mm-hmm. And CGI, a huge reason CGI was able to progress the way it did in the 90s was because of George Lucas. The special editions were mm-hmm. not just a way for him to make more money, but for a way for him to progress that technology faster and test it for the prequels. Now, you can argue that it made the prequels worse. There are a lot of things in the prequels that would not have been possible. There's just a lot of, like, for better or for ill, it was a really smart way to get the technology progressed, because it was easy money to re-release those and make money in the 90s. It's also responsible for kind of bringing Star Wars back. From what I understand, people kind of forgot about Star Wars. Mm-hmm. In the late 80s, early 90s, Star Wars had like faded away. I mean, imagine if you were to sit right now and look at like the popular series of like the 90s that are just totally gone now. You can look at the success of something like Indiana Jones. No one went and saw the new one. Like, people know Indiana Jones, but they don't want to go see a new Indiana Jones.
Mom, correct us if you went and saw the... I think they did see that. I think my parents saw
it. Maybe some people went and saw it, but like it wasn't like a huge hit. Or like, it feels like everything's been brought back at some point, so it's hard. But Highlander, I guess off the top of my head. Highlander was big in the late 80s. There can only be one, the immortal. Sean Connery is an immortal, and he trains a young guy who's Scottish, and I think is it Mr. Krabs? I think the villain. I think it's a great point. It wasn't Star Wars big, but it was fairly notable. It had a TV show. It had like four sequels. It's totally gone now. Hmm. You don't even know about it.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner was never really a series. I'm trying to think of something that was that had multiple installments. Die Hard, maybe. I'm trying to think of, it's hard to think of something that's forgotten because it's forgotten. You had, I guess maybe more, like you have action stars like Steven Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme. These guys were huge in the 80s and 90s, and no one knows, younger people have no idea what they are now. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm trying to get at is that's kind of what Star Wars was like in the late 80s, early 90s. Like, it was huge in its time and it had kind of gone away. And the re-release of the prequels was of the original trilogy in theaters in the 90s was a lot of people's first time viewing it. So what I'm saying is there is a lot of good that the pursuit of the special editions did to keep Star Wars alive and to progress the technology. That was a tangent I did not expect to go on. But that is, I think, my biggest point was it is not such an easy yes or no question on whether the Star Wars special edition should exist. There's a lot of good and bad wrapped up in it. Just like Star Wars. That's Star Wars. I think people really want to make Star Wars so black and white, but like, there's good things about it. There's bad things about it. Any given thing. Any given Star Wars thing, if you look at it, I guarantee there are good and bad things about it, both for itself, for the industry. Like, Star Wars, again, for good or for bad, totally changed Hollywood. And if Hollywood changes, it really changes the entire entertainment world. So the creation of Star Wars has ripple effects through all of culture, almost, to some degree. So there are definitely good and bad things about that. Like this podcast. And you can decide whether that's good or bad
butterfly
thing.
Butterfly effect.
Have another thing?
I got two things.
Go for it.
This is a little sad, but Tamora Morrison has reported that there's like no plans to bring back Boba Fett at this time. He hasn't been informed of anything in future projects.
Yeah, you know, it's really a bummer when a studio blames a thing's failure not on their choices, but on the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think people would still want to see Boba Fett, and people would still want to see yep. him as Boba Fett. Like, that is not what... People did not hate the Boba Fett show because of Tamora Morrison
yeah.
or the character of Boba Fett. It was because they clearly did not know what they wanted to do. They pushed...
They pushed all of...
The Mandalorian stuff.
Well... I'm not really a Legends defender by any means, but mm-hmm. like all the stuff with Boba Fett and Legends is who they made with The Mandalorian, basically.
Yeah, see, that's what I was going to say as well, is pretty much The Mandalorian was the character you'd expect Boba Fett to be, which I actually thought that created an interesting open space. Mm-hmm. I liked, this is so off topic now, I want to make the argument of there was interesting stuff in there. It was not all bad. I think the whole thing of him going and living with the Tusken Raiders
was
incredible.
So good.
It was the him feeling the need to be a terrible crime lord of, was it Mos Espa?
Yeah.
Not even Mos Eisley, Mos Espa.
Mos Vespa.
Like, also, is that all Jabba the Hutt was? It always felt like Jabba the Hutt's power was much bigger than Tatooine.
Yeah, I mean.
In just those couple of cities.
I don't know. It was just definitely some odd choices. And then it's like they're afraid to dive too deep into Boba Fett.
Yep.
They're like, oh, we gotta bring the Mandalorian back. Dumb.
I see. So I don't think they have to be redundant. Like,
no.
It is unfortunate. I do hope we get to see him. And, well, other thing I was going to say is I do think there's actually a fairly good lesson to be learned from Marvel. I do feel like Marvel don't blame the character. They will find a good use for a character.
Mm-hmm.
Like... For example, the Inhumans TV show. No one saw it. It was a horrible flop. But they still found a way to bring back one of the lead characters. The guy who can, like, when he doesn't talk, because when he talks, it, like, destroys things. He's the leader of the Inhumans. Black Bolt, I think, is his name. It is used very effectively and briefly in Doctor Strange, The Multiverse of Madness. Like, they brought back the actor mm-hmm. to play the character again. It's really fun. It's a small example, but, like, they will reuse and bring back characters even from a thing that failed in effective ways. You know, they brought back Julie Gardner who played Elektra in the early 2000s in the terrible Ben Affleck movie, and even worse, Elektra movie. They brought her back and they brought back Wesley Snipes as Blade, both of those in Deadpool and Wolverine, and those were mostly for comedic effect, but they did actually give those characters like a reinvention. So my point is, if you have the right motivation, if you have you can, especially if there's a really good actor in there, 100%. I think mm-hmm. I'm speaking to the choir here. I have a thing that's not news, but I was in Kansas City. Blur that out. We're not allowed to say near where we live or what state we're in. Athena has quieted down, so I'm guessing that she's sleeping.
She does look like she's a little knocked out.
So I was in a major city near our state, redacted, and I saw a couple of fun things. One was this custom AT-ST that's like, I think it's supposed to be...
looks like a mouse.
Or My Little Pony. No, not my... Not My Little Pony. Hello Kitty. Thank you. It's a AT-ST that's got pink highlights and a nose with whiskers and a pink bow in its head and ears. And I'm not realizing there's something on the side that I did not get a good... It says... I can't read it. So, but I thought that was a fun... Someone that's custom cute. Painted that. Another fun thing I saw. So this was in a shop. And when I saw it first, I should have taken a picture of what it looked like. So this is what I saw at first. Oh, Spinosaurus. Wrong. Oh. It's a Spinosaurus car.
Oh, it's like the ones you drag back and it shoots forward.
Yeah. So the way the package was like tilted forward. So all I could see was the top of the Spinosaurus.
Did you buy it?
No.
Oh.
And when I pulled it forward, his stomach is like elongated and he has wheels coming out of his stomach. Really bizarre. What other news you got?
So it's not news, but something that I thought was interesting is that Screen Rant compiled their top 20 episodes of Star Wars ever.
Top 20 episodes like Star Wars television?
Yes, of Star Wars television.
I see.
So I'm kind of intrigued, so I kind of want to go through that list, and I'll do it quickly, briefly. We don't have much to talk about.
Okay.
So at 20, as in, so first is going to be their, like, most of all time, the best. Yeah. 20 best of all time, Acolyte episode 5, which is when the stranger shows up and starts murdering people. Pretty
great
good.
Episode.
I think it's funny they differentiated it as season 1, as if there's multiple seasons.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Skeleton Crew. Episode 6, when the kids are lost on that spa planet.
I would say that's not as good as the previous episode of The Acolyte, but I also think they're trying... I mean, the difficulty with top list is you always wanted... Like, theoretically, all 20 of these could be Andor. Like,
Someone was like, why is Andor as common?
You try to, like... It's not technically actually the top 20 episode. You want to give, like, a variety. Well, it's always going to be subjective, but it's a variety to resemble lots of different areas of Star Wars, different... types and different genres and different tones. So I can understand wanting to have Skeleton Crew in there. And that episode was the best episode, as I recall. But 19 is probably top 20 of all time. I'm not so sure. Okay. There had better be a lot of Rebels on here. If the series finale is number 18.
Number 18 is the series finale when Ezra yeets Thrawn into the outer reaches of space with whales. Episode 17 is Rebels, episode 17, season 2. The episode where they give Kallus a heart when he's trapped on a
Ice
planet.
I've got the list here in front of me. That I can see that would be one of your favorite episodes.
It is. Number 16 is Andor season 2, the final episode.
It's a good one. It's memorable.
15, Obi-Wan Kenobi season 1. The final episode, I think, episode 6.
Yeah, the fight. The main thing there being the fight between Obi-Wan and Vader, which, while not, like, super impactful canonically, is beautifully shot. It's meaningful, not because of what its implications on the narrative, but because it's Ewan and Hayden again. I think it's less... I think people rag on it too much because... Yeah, it doesn't need to happen. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But it's just, it's emotional. When you watch it, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan. I'm a big defender of that sequence in general.
Yeah, that sequence is a very high point for the series.
Oh, 100%.
I really wish there'd been more focus on that. But, you know, we're not. What's done is done.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 14... the final Clone Wars episode, Victory and Death.
Yeah, good stuff.
They're listing for 13, the sixth episode of Andor season 1, The Eye, which has that gorgeous shot. It's the heist episode of the Imperial Bank. It's just special effects go brr. 12, Tales of the Jedi Season 1, Episode 5. Boom. I wouldn't put any of the Tales episodes on here.
Not only are you saying this is the 12th episode, you're saying it's better than all the things you've listed before.
Yeah.
Not even close. That is a terrible choice.
To me, the Tales of the Jedi stuff mm-hmm. is just like... Clone Wars. Sorry, I just don't care for the Tales anthology. They're fine, but I don't mm-hmm. think they're peak Star Wars by any means.
For sure,
they're nostalgia bait.
Mm-hmm.
Their 11th episode, Ahsoka Episode 5, Shadow Warrior, which is again a very Clone Wars episode.
So yeah, that's the World Between Worlds episode, yep. And another very Rebels. The whale.
Yeah,
moment with the most incredible bit of music.
I'll give it credit for that because the hyperspace jump is probably one of my top Star Wars music tracks. It's ever.
I mean, I do like. When I think of Ahsoka...
If you want to hear me talk about it, I probably ranted about it for 10 minutes when we talked about Ahsoka.
Yep. This episode is definitely the high point of the show. And is just a... And again, like, at the risk of being nostalgia baited, when you bring back Hayden, in both of these instances of the Obi-Wan show and this, mm-hmm. it is very effective.
He's filming for season 2.
Yeah. And... I think this episode, to get some, I don't know about closure, but just some more thorough, detailed insight into Anakin's psychology. Because I oftentimes think about, if you had, before the prequels came out, there was actually... It was probably very much up in the air exactly where the prequels would end.
Mm-hmm.
Because theoretically, the prequel trilogy could have ended right before episode 4 starts. It really leaves a huge gap.
18 years.
And also, episode 3, the movie itself, rushes really...
So much.
It goes through a lot. So my point is the actual psychology of Anakin Skywalker changing into Vader is actually not that well explored, given that they had a trilogy to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually not that well... what he was actually going through is not that well explored. So I do feel like this episode does a lot to contribute to who Anakin is as a person post-Turn to the Dark
and
Side.
And I feel like the looks we're getting are through... the snippets from Clone Wars, yep. and really it's just that Mortis arc. It's that. Yep. That's it. And then the books.
Mm-hmm.
So
what I'm saying is I really, even though, yes, you could say, oh, you're just happy to see Hayden Christensen again. I'm actually not.
I would definitely say that for Tales episode. Yeah. I'm like, are you being for real?
But I don't think I'm just blinded by nostalgia because even though I grew up with the prequels, I actually don't have a lot of nostalgia for them positively, I would say. Like, I have nostalgia for them, but it's fairly neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And as movies, I'm actually very negative on them. And you have to really work hard to convince me that they're good. And I'm very frustrated by them as a Star Wars fan and a film fan. And I think that is why I was so impressed by Hayden Christensen and the writers and the directors managing to pull from the ashes of the prequels this really good performance in both Episode of Kenobi and Ahsoka from him.
Yeah, I would say if there was like a lot of more nostalgia bait for this episode, just would have been a remake of one of the Clone Wars episodes.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so their top 10 episode is the season finale of Andor Season 1, Rick's Road, which, you know what? I'll give him snaps for that. That's... That's also another great music track. Eulogy mm-hmm. throughout Marva's speech. So good. Yeah. That whole episode, amazing. Okay. Episode 9, Clone Wars Season 5, Episode 20, The Wrong Jedi, which is where Ahsoka gets framed for blowing up part of the Jedi Temple.
So I think one of the biggest problems with Clone Wars...
Oh, it's where she leaves or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the biggest problems with Clone Wars is the four... Is it four episode arcs? Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was four.
It made everything feel very stretched out. I'm not saying there were bad four episode arcs, but not everything needed to be a four.
There were definitely some bad four episode arcs. I think the shortest arc was a two episode arc where the main characters were Jar Jar and Mace Windu on Naboo.
And what I'm saying is I remember this feeling very drawn out. So yes, mm-hmm. the idea of Ahsoka getting framed, nearly being excommunicated and then choosing to leave is very compelling, is a very important pivotal moment in current Star Wars canon. But as an episode of TV, I remember actually not liking it very much at all. I found, again, it's interesting to lay the seeds for other Jedi distrusting the Jedi Order. I just don't remember finding Barriss. Is it Barriss?
It's Barriss.
That compelling of a character. I found the way the mystery was unraveled not very compelling.
Well, I think they also kind of wrote themselves into a hole because they were like, oh, it should be someone close to Ahsoka. Well, it can't be Rex, it can't be Obi-Wan, it can't be Anakin. So I feel like they just found the closest young Jedi that would have been her age. Sure. And they're like,
sure.
They said, Barriss. We don't know what happened to her after Order 66.
Yeah.
Which now we do. So yeah, that one. Yeah, the downside, and I've said this before, the downside about, you're like, when there's a slower episode of Rebels, it's easier to go find something to do for 20 minutes versus 80 minutes of a Clone Wars arc. All right. Their top 8 episode is Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 15, which is...
Seems to be the series finale.
I think so.
Yeah. No. This is just straight up wrong. There's no arguing in favor of this. I would think if you like Bad Batch, this episode pisses you off.
I feel like this should have been the season finale of the first season.
I totally agree. That's where my mind goes.
With Kamino being destroyed.
Or the series... just as
such a good one.
Yeah, like, either of those are pretty good. This, to me, as someone who didn't even really like the show that much, I just felt like the show's potential was totally wasted. Bad finale.
You've heard us talk about it. My main thought is that I think they tried to do too much, and by the time they realized what constraints they were under, they had to cut back. Too much. Okay, their top 7. Rebels Season 3, Episode 20, Twin Suns, which is the final showdown between Kenobi and Maul.
Beautiful.
I'll give it to him.
Like,
I'm so angry that everyone's like, they need to make this in live action. Shut up. You're wrong.
No, it's really an incredible, what I have really appreciated about Disney Star Wars between, what I'm talking about here is Kenobi quickly finishing off Maul.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about moments like, I honestly very much love Luke's death. In that, what that whole sequence implies about Jedi. I'm trying to think of maybe another example. Ahsoka. I want to think about this. Ahsoka's the big moment with Ahsoka where she like connects with the Force and uses she communicates with the whales.
Mm-hmm.
These are all three to me examples of Jedi. The ultimate form of a Jedi is not that they become the ultimate swords master. It's that there is another... You advance.
It's their connection with the Force.
You want to avoid violence. It's a connection with the Force. There is much more to a Jedi than just being really good at fighting a lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I might be contradicting myself, but, like, I do feel like the fact that Obi-Wan finishes off Darth Maul with one hit...
It puts him down like a dog.
Like, it kind of shows that, like, he is so much above... The lightsaber fight at this point?
Because it's all revenge for Maul.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan could have gone down that path because he killed Qui-Gon. He didn't. Yep. He was just like, this is it, my guy.
So, fan of that. And it's such a small moment. And then the interaction they have, and that he holds Maul like he held Qui-Gon. Mm-hmm. Ugh,
and they have they have that conversation between, you know, the savior. They didn't call him a savior, but whoever's going to come and stop it all.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Maul asks him a question about, like, do you know, or like, is he here or something? I think Obi-Wan's like, he's here.
Does he ask if he's the chosen one, Luke? Does he ask, is the boy the chosen one?
I think so.
Something like
that.
If it's not the exact language, it's very similar.
Or maybe just like, is he here? Something like
that. Is he the one who can bring down the Emperor or something like that?
I was like, And then he buries him.
Yeah.
He could have just left him out to rot, but he buries him. I guess baking. I don't know if you're really rotting on Tatooine, if anything, you're just baking and mummifying. Anyways, their top episode 6 is season 7 of Clone Wars, episode 11, Shattered, which is the execution of Order 66 episode.
I do feel like that's kind of redundant with the Clone Wars finale. Like, again, that is the trouble with some of these shows is the episodes really are more...
Yeah.
Like, they're not... The same thing is repeated across those episodes. So I feel like it's pretty much the same, though I would say that this is the best episode
of Clone
Wars.
That cool shot with Maul.
Oh, no. This is the... Oh, sorry. Someone's trying to call me. My phone, my laptop's not silenced. My bad. This is the
now,
peak episode.
Now all of the internet knows you're an Apple user.
The finale is great, but, like, this episode, when the actual Order 66 moment happens, is, like, the core moment. Speaking of going down hallways, the next episode that's on the list.
Mandalorian Season 2, the finale when Luke shows up.
Now, this is nostalgia bait. Look, I like it. This is not a great episode of television. Honestly, I will... as many points as this episode gets for the cool Luke fight, I dock so many points for the CGI Luke face. I will never forget.
They should have just, the guy they hired looks like him. They should have just kept him. His name's like Ben or something.
I will never forgive this. It's one of the worst choices ever. It's so bad.
That's the thing. They're so afraid of recasting the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Like I said, the guy they hired looks like him. If they had kept him, I would have been like, that is Luke. Is it Mark Hamill? No, but that's Luke.
If, like, because forever, from the moment it aired, and it's only going to look worse with time, is you don't see Luke Skywalker. Mm-hmm. The idea, like, if you're generous to them, the idea is for them, oh, they want it to not be the actor. They want it to be the character Luke Skywalker. You don't see Luke Skywalker. You see a bad CGI face that's super distracting. If it was just some actor, you'd be like, oh, that is, you get a nobody actor that doesn't have... an affiliation. Obviously, if it was like Matt Damon or like so, or like even if people really want
the guy they hired,
if people really wanted Sebastian Stan who played Bucky and they wanted, even he would maybe not be a great choice.
I don't think he should be,
because you would see this pre-existing actor. You get an actor people aren't super familiar with, the people go, oh, the costume, the lightsaber, that's Luke Skywalker. Even if it's not Mark Hamill,
the behind the scenes of this guy, he's
always hate it. And to me, as I do like it, but it does feel like fan service for the people who hated Last Jedi. You're showing me something, but I don't know what you're showing me.
I think Screen Rant just might have given me a virus.
Uh-oh. That was probably just an ad.
They were like, Trojan wall scanning.
This moment with Luke just cutting down all of the dark bots or dark trooper bots, whatever they're called. Just feels like them trying to make up for Luke's death, which I think is ridiculous because I don't think it needs to be made up for. Like, again, this is not top peak Jedi. It's not peak Jedi just to show up with a lightsaber and tear through things. For me, peak Jedi is to do anything else. So I don't hate this episode, but to put it at number five is a fundamental misunderstanding of what makes good Star Wars. But Episode 4, the next one that they're going to say, quite good.
Oh, I didn't know if you were going to read it.
I'm letting you read them.
Okay, Andor Season 1, Episode 10, One Way Out, The Jailbreak. Peak stars. We don't have to explain that. We've talked about it. We actually haven't talked about Season 1, but we've definitely talked about it in passing.
Enough, yes.
it's too good. Their top three, Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 7, The Believer, which is the episode where... They're at Imperial base. The Mandalorian has to remove his helmet to save Grogu. But you also have that kind of that monologue from Bill Burr.
Yeah.
Which Boston accents canon in Star Wars. But I enjoyed Bill.
No, that's a solid standalone episode. I think it's pretty bold to put it at three. But at least this is an episode that's not just the highlight is someone pulling out a lightsaber.
It did have, whatever weapon Boba Fett's ship has. Had one of those in it.
Nice. That is good stuff, though.
Had one of those in it. All right. Episode 2, Andor Season 2, Episode 9, Welcome to the Rebellion, which has Mon Mothma's speech and her escape to Yavin. It's pretty good. And their number one episode of Star Wars ever is Andor Season 2, Episode 8, Who Are You?, which is the Gorman Massacre 2.
See, this is where I, like, two episodes from Andor Season 2 that are very close to each other in, they're literally actually, it's 8 and 9. This is where I don't think, this is almost my issue with television is... Oftentimes, individual episodes are kind of indiscernible from other individual episodes. I don't like this kind of list, mainly because this is very difficult to sparse out. Like, it feels Why would you make this list just to put two episodes of Andor that are right next to each other at the top two? Like, what point? Like, yes, we all love Andor. Andor is the best Star Wars thing of the Disney era, sure. But, like, what point are you making by doing this? I don't know. No one's going to disagree with this, though. Like, yeah, Andor's amazing. But I would argue that either One Way Out or... Is it Bix Road?
Rick's Road. It does feel like Bix Road, though.
So what are we missing in here? I think there's probably a couple episodes of Mandalorian that are missing.
I'm surprised the episode with either where Kanan dies.
Oh yeah.
Or the episode where it's like after he dies with all the wolves. I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah.
That episode. I mean,
those are certainly better than the Bad Batch series finale.
The finale of season one of Bad Batch. That if you're gonna you should put that.
There's not a lot of Clone Wars. Also, like, why would you include?
The episode where Palpatine's plot almost gets found out in Clone Wars. Mm. I'm surprised that one wasn't in there.
I can't believe you would include an episode of Tales of the Jedi and not just another episode of Clone Wars. I'm trying to think what other shows. I would argue. One of the episodes from Book of Boba Fett earlier in the season.
Yeah, one or two.
Whatever episode has the most Tusken Raider stuff, that would probably fit in here.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got... I was trying to think through shows. You had three seasons of Mandalorian. I would probably put the... is it the third episode of season three where we go to Coruscant? I would probably have that in here. Great episode.
I think my mom skipped that one.
So yeah, Mandalorian, Kenobi is in here. I think they chose right. That's like the one episode from Kenobi that I would include. Ahsoka, I think they did a good job. That's the one episode of Ahsoka I would include.
We have to Google Star Wars.
Okay, this would be hard. Tales of the Jedi. Visions.
Oh,
I think I would definitely include one or two episodes of Visions in here. Visions, everything from Visions, definitely better than Bad Batch and Tales of the Jedi. Let's see what else we got. We've got obviously Andor.
What about the two seasons of Ewoks?
No, definitely not. That's from the 80s.
Don't forget about Droids.
Yeah, also bad, but also from the 80s.
What about Young Jedi Adventures? No. Those are canon, aren't they? Not a single Resistance episode.
That's well deserved. That is well deserved.
Surprise, there wasn't anything from Genndy Tartakovsky's. Oh,
yeah, I would. There's a couple in there. So that's harder because those are micro episodes. So that would be, but I would think one of those definitely deserves to be in here.
Put a Light and Magic episode on there.
Yeah.
Is there another Skeleton Crew one that was pretty young? Is the sixth one maybe the one where maybe that is the?
I think the second episode was a. I think you could just watch just that second episode where they go to. It's kind of the first real episode. They're off the planet. They go
to the spaceport.
Yeah, that's a great episode.
Tortuga.
Yeah,
not Tortuga.
Yeah, I did enjoy Lego Star Wars Rebuild the Galaxy, but I don't know if I would include any of that in here in top 20 episodes. That really it feels like there's been more Star Wars shows, but that's three seasons of Mandalorian felt like a lot.
Yeah. I'd almost do more from Mandalorian season one than season two.
Yeah, yeah. I'm shocked that there's not a little more Mandalorian on here, but they did a couple good selections.
Hold on. There's got to be one. Like, I mean, the first ones of Mandalorian is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you could just like any I think I'm trying to think of like what's a peak Grogu episode.
Maybe when he's first introduced and he saves Mando from that rhino thing.
Yeah.
Oh, because he uses the Force.
Din Djarin, the Mandalorian fighting the Ewoks is pretty great. People really like the episode where he's on the space prison. I don't like that episode as much. I just felt like there was no geography.
Jack Black episode.
You know, I like that episode. I don't hate that episode. I would not put it top 20, episode. But I find that episode very endearing.
If of all the episodes that you're going to put celebrities in, I'll take that one.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you're going to put anyone crazy like that, it's got to be Jack Black. You can't put in Conan or whatever Saturday.
I don't know. I think Conan could be a fun Star Wars cameo.
But I'm talking about Saturday Night, like, people you would expect that they'd cast there. It'd be like the worst Saturday Night Live person who hasn't had more than 12 viewers a night. I don't know.
I might genuinely put in from Bad Batch the season 2 episode where it's just Crosshair and Cody on that mission together. Yeah. That's
Cody, that man is dead.
That's a really good standalone episode.
It is a good standalone.
That's actually not as bad. No, okay. Fun fact, I actually wrote for Screen Rant for a short time. I wrote a few. I actually wrote a Yoda article that was like everything we know about Yoda.
Did you write it like Yoda would?
No, that would have been funny. No, they did. What I'm trying to get is like you do not have a lot of creative freedom. And it
spilled
really
the tea about Screen Rant.
I wrote for them for like 3 weeks, and I got fired because the amount of money they were paying me was not equivalent to the amount of time that it would take to write. What they expected was not very well spelled out, and they really wanted things to they really did not want any creativity from you. And what you get into a lot of the time with this stuff is actually very hard to confirm a lot of your facts. Like, a lot of this stuff is actually sometimes very hard to look up in a short amount of time. I'm not sitting here trying to spend 10 hours on an article I'm going to get paid a couple dollars for. I'm trying to... But they
would make money.
So they got mad at me for my stuff not being very good. But, like, that was their fault, I felt. Like, given more creative freedom and less parameters, like, if you've ever read a Screen Rant article, you literally have to scroll past the... Now, this one's actually not too bad. A news article, like, the first 3 paragraphs are worthless. It's just like, you know, if you wrote an article about Ahsoka, the first 2 paragraphs are about Ahsoka was invented in 2011 for the Clone Wars animated movie and continued to become a fan favorite throughout the show. Like, you have to recap the history of the character before you get to the actual news. I freaking hated writing like that.
Word count.
Yeah, well, they want to keep you on the page for as long as possible. They want you to scroll. They also turned one of my articles into a video, and I didn't get paid any extra for that. Like, literally, my article, line for line, was made into a video that someone else did, and I got paid. I was never asked, and I got paid nothing for it, for the video part. So it was pretty... They're 100% just a content.
Scummy! Role.
I hated it. It was awful. All that to say, I expected this article to be trash. And is this this list actually not too bad. I think this list actually does a decent job for the most part of hand choosing episodes that might not be as obvious, really valuing episodes that tell contained effective stories, but also I some inexplicable choices in here. But that was fun. That was a fun kind of review of where we're at with Star Wars television. I had something else. What was it? It wasn't necessarily news per se. What was it?
Is Alien Earth out?
Is it? I think it's maybe about to come out. No, it
comes out on the 12th.
So that's the Alien Xenomorph show.
On Earth.
Ridley Scott's Alien, as it were. It's a hard series to talk about. It's just Alien or Aliens. What was it? Maybe it'll come back around in a little bit. I did have a question for you. We went through 2 months of dinosaur stuff, and I don't feel like I ever straight up asked you what your favorite dinosaur is. You may have said it at some point, but I don't remember.
I don't think I've said it.
I feel like this is an important oversight that we never actually discussed. I wouldn't say I actually have a favorite dinosaur. I don't know enough about dinosaurs. I would say post these movies, big dome-headed one.
Pachycephalosaurus.
Yeah, Pachycephalosaurus. I liked his personality in the movie.
The personality completely faked and given to him?
Yes, exactly. So, but he also reminded me a lot of Yoshi. And I love Yoshi. So, that was pretty good. That was a good impression. So, give me like, do you want to give me like your top three in no particular order? If you haven't tough,
I do love me a good T-Rex.
Classic. I mean, there's a reason he's the most popular.
They're just pretty cool.
Now, what really distinguishes a T-Rex? My big takeaway, I would say, from June Jurassic Park and July Jurassic World was there are so many other dinosaurs that are very similar that I couldn't necessarily tell the difference. So why T-Rex over like a Carnosaurus or these other ones that are so similar?
I just think they're cool. They're powerhouses.
Okay, fair enough.
I remember going to another large city, Chicago.
And we will not say how far away that is.
Yeah, to the big museum and seeing Sue, the dinosaur. Like one of the biggest T-Rexes ever found. Like her head's too big for them to actually put her on her body. Also crumble. Like her head, her head's massive.
Interesting, okay.
That's true!
No, like, what is that? To me, that implies that it's not a correctly formed skeleton. Like, I know that there's a lot of instances in which paleontologists tried to force skeletons together that should not have been together.
So it just would have been, it's just too much weight to have it up that high.
Yeah, but then how would the body have functioned?
Muscles.
I need to see an image of this guy. What's
she's a lady.
What was the name?
Sue, the T-Rex.
S-U-E?
Yeah.
Because okay. So this is a recreation, I'm sure. This is not the actual bones. I was way too old when I realized that the dinosaur skeletons on display mm-hmm. at the museums are not actual skeletons, but are recreations. I was way too old when I realized that.
All right, so apparently it's not too heavy to put on display. But it's still, by itself, it's still like 600 pounds.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah. No,
this thing is huge.
And they do a lot of research on it, so they have to take it down all the time. But it's a replica on the skeleton itself.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, this is cool.
It's just upstairs.
So, we have the T-Rex. Who else is in your top three?
I always found myself fond of the Velociraptors.
Okay, another classic. Yep.
Compies.
And compies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much is this influenced, and not a right or wrong answer, but how much is this influenced by the Jurassic Park movies versus your other knowledge of...
I would say the first two, yeah, influenced, but also the compies, just personal.
Yeah. How did you come about even... For me, the only knowledge I have of compies is from
the movies. I think they're cute. They're another Star Wars... They're another... sorry. Sleeper agent. They're another dinosaur stuff. I just think they're cute. That's what I would probably have as a pet.
I see.
I mean, I already have a garbage-eating animal in my home anyways. But I think they're cute. I like this tall. Can you imagine taking one of those things on a walk?
No, I cannot.
Well, use your imagination. I think it'd be fun.
Dang, you got me. Okay.
Cute.
So maybe we're 15 minutes in.
Maybe throwing a baryonyx for funsies on it.
So that one I don't know off the top of my head. How do you spell that?
Barry. B-A-R-Y.
B-A-R-Y.
O-N-I-X.
There it is. Let's take a look at this bad boy.
Mid-sized carnivore.
Oh. Like, is this present anywhere in the movies?
I think it's in Fallen Kingdom.
Oh, the one that like chases them in the lab.
I think so.
And up when you, I think you sent me the video of like when your friend can point at a chair and summon a dinosaur. Chair.
Lady yells at chair summon at dinosaur summoning chair. Yeah.
yeah, that's a good one. That's a really cool design there. You know, if anything, I've also enjoyed just the memes generated by the Spinosaurus of its gradual decline, as it were, from cool T-Rex competitor to very floppy amphibious guy.
Yo, can I get a McGriddle? If you've been on the internet in the last 3 weeks, you know what that means.
We've gotta shout those videos out. That guy has put a ton of work into those videos.
There's a collection of videos of someone where Paul Kirby, the dad from the third movie, is running a McDonald's and the dinosaurs keep showing up.
I gotta find the name of this.
Do you
channel.
Like how I sent you... Did I send you one and then send you the other six? Or did I send you all of them at once?
Oh, I'm not sure. I didn't look at the time codes. See, sometimes you send them to my personal account, and sometimes you send them to the Rebels and Robots account.
So. Sometimes I just think about the ones that we can talk about on the podcast. I
see. Okay, let's take a look. Let's see.
That makes it sound like I send bad things. It's just ones that are a little bit more podcast relevant.
Sure. Epic Ouija. So Epic, Weege on Instagram, and I'm sure other platforms. This is the most brain rot, insane. But like, he has made so many. It is as an editor myself, I am just aghast at the amount of work these videos have taken.
I sent you one on the 23rd, and then the next day, I sent you four more.
Yeah, but there's also, he did like a similar one. But it's Squid Games. Like yes, this is not like the highest quality videos you ever see. But like put out this many for like. It is low effort memes, but like an amount, it's not actually low effort. It's a ton of work. So I respect the commitment to this. What is going on over there?
I was taking a screenshot of a meme that I sent you you didn't react to, so therefore you did not see it.
That's not always true. If I reacted to ones around it, that means I saw it. I just didn't react to it. So before are you going to address some of the things we have on the table before we talk about Transformers?
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the things on the table. My mom gave...
I want to take a look. I want to see it.
My mom gave me the... You want to say it or see it?
See it.
So my mom... I saw my rent the other day. And my mom goes, I have some stuff for you. Because that happens once you have your own place. Your parents just start like giving you things. Which is fine. And she goes, wow. Hey, I found this for you. It is a comic from 1994...
Uh-huh.
Which is older
I could have told you. This is one of the most 90s possible illustrations.
Yeah, 1994. It's older than me. And it's a comic called Tales of the Jedi.
Yeah. No, this is... This
collection
is
of Jedi
100%
stories.
Where they got the title for the cartoon.
Yeah. I said, remember that comic no one read in the 1994? Just a collection of short stories, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. No, and this was a much larger series than just this.
It's in color. It's like book.
Yeah. I mean, the illustrations are quite nice. The one I opened it up to is two guys, both have huge shoulder pads, lots of straps on their outfit, and just way oversized guns with huge lasers. That's very 90s. there's like nothing very Star Wars I'm seeing. Like this is very much like it looks like a 90s comic book, but not very Star Wars-y per se. But also, these people are very prehistoric. Also, a little sticker just fell out.
That's me. I put that in there because I couldn't to make sure I remembered the year.
When is this millennia? Oh, so this is literally supposed to be like prehistoric.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just a prehistoric planet, but this is prehistoric. So this is like
the prequel movie we may or may not get.
Yeah, the origin of the Jedi. Like this is way far back. Oh, that is pretty compelling concept to see just like what this universe was like in its primitive state. Cool. And there's a hut. That's interesting. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. My mom said if I ever don't want it, I have to give it back.
Nice.
Which I don't plan on getting rid of it, but I think it was funny. She said, you got to give this one back. I said,
all right.
Oh, my bad.
Let's end with the most interesting one there. So we've got a cool Andor character.
So, in case you're new to the podcast, I like to buy Star Wars figures. This is a Target exclusive.
Oh.
It's just an ISB tactical agent. So the agents that were sent after Andor and Clea in episode 10, maybe, when they go to rescue Clea. It's just an ISB tactical agent in the cool armor. I remember when we saw the trailer for Andor season 2 and they showed a very quick glimpse of the ISB armor, I went... Never made a toy out of that one.
And then, of course, we've got your man.
Oh, it's not a Black Series figure. This is the first vintage collection thing I've ever bought. Yeah. They have finally given us, Hasbro has finally given us a figure of Agent Kallus. And it's Empire Kallus, so we'll forgive them for that. But it's kind of styled in the old vintage packaging with the big cardboard backing on it.
It even says Kenner on it.
Yeah, it
which
says
is the
Kenner.
Company that used to make Star Wars stuff. So the question is, did Hasbro just buy Kenner? Because like you wouldn't use another company's logo unless you...
You wouldn't use another company's logo.
Like that just also How did I not know that Callus's first name is Alexander? But it's A-L-E-X-S-A-N-D-R.
Yes, that's correct.
How did I not know that?
You didn't read his wiki like I did. apparently, Hasbro bought the Tonka Corporation in 1991, which included Kenner.
I did not realize it went that deep. That's wild.
So he's in box for now. I'm an inbox collector because I'm that person. Mm-hmm. I like the way the Black Series ones look like books, but I don't know if I'll keep this. I don't know if I'll keep them in. I might free him, but it looks good with the cardboard backing.
So he doesn't have. Okay, so now I'm misremembering. Does the gun fold out into the staff?
Yeah.
Okay, I see. Does he like? Can you like wind him up and release him, and he does a weird backflip at an impossible speed?
I don't know. I haven't taken him out of the box yet.
No, this is cool. I liked it a lot.
I thought about buying two.
Open and one.
Open and one. I'd probably open this one because, see, when I first got it, it was actually a little damaged. It also had a bunch of glue stuck to the back.
All right. We're almost an hour in. Time to talk about Transformers Dinobot Islands.
Parts one and two.
Two-part episode from... Oh, wait. I never found... Great. Thank you. I never found what season and episode this is.
Season two.
It is. Transformers. So it did come out in 1995 of season two. So it's episode 85 for us.
Before Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton plagiarized.
Yeah. Well, they're all plagiarizing the Lost World from the early 1900s. So
this is a Lost World.
September 1985. Very interesting.
Not to go back to the things I buy, but I need them to come out with a post-Empire Callus, like a Rebels one. I need to have both. Hasbro, if you're listening.
So, quick plot synopsis. The Autobots discover an island with dinosaurs, a lost world, if you will, and the Dinobots are just too destructive for their own good, so
It's just the equivalent of keeping five Huskies in a 400 square foot apartment.
Very good, yes. Or just like young boys.
Athena in a one bedroom.
Yeah, uh-huh. And so the Autobots send them to the island to kind of just, what's the lead one's name?
Grimlock.
Grimlock, the T-Rex Autobot. He is trying to shape them up. Meanwhile, the Decepticons figure out about the island. And of course, as always, it can somehow be harvested to make Energon cubes.
Correct.
Now, this episode, as usual, flies at a breakneck speed, and sometimes the actual important information gets lost. Some time portals start opening up around the quote the world, which is really just the U.S.
Because for some reason the energy of the island is like in a time warp pocket, which is why they're survived, and the Decepticons messing with the energy, literally messing with the energy of the island is making other time warp portals open elsewhere in the world, conveniently in the hometown where the Autobots
are. Yeah, not very far away. So, and two open up, one, or three. One releases some cavemen into the city.
And mammoths.
It's mammoths. One releases a pirate ship out into the ocean. And another one releases cowboys who fight with some bikers.
Do you know what this makes me think of?
I have no idea. I've never seen anything quite like this.
Hold on. This almost makes me think of Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase movie.
Well, Scooby, if it has any sort of vibe, pirates
have
and...
Have you not seen Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase?
I have not seen much
you
Scooby-Doo
You need
all.
To see some of these early late 90s, early 2000s movies. They're some of the best. Fun fact, apparently that movie came out on October 9th, 2001.
It's an unfortunate time to release anything, really.
Yeah.
You know, when the country needed it most, Scooby-Doo was there.
And you know what? It's a good film. I would probably say out of the Scooby-Doo movies, it's my second favorite ever. Top favorite, Zombie Island.
Yes, we talked about it last October.
This is the best.
And then eventually the Autobots end up back on the Dinosaur Island to fight the Decepticons, as usual. Notes. I think we'll just go in chronological order. Bumblebee has a jetpack, along with later, all the Decepticons end up using jetpacks as well, when everyone can fly.
Uh-huh.
Why is this such a problem in this series? That Just don't make everyone able to fly. Maybe, why can everyone fly? It's such a problem.
Maybe enough people complained that they could fly when they shouldn't fly, so now they have to use jetpacks.
But the Decepticons can still all fly, and the Dinobots can still fly in this episode. So why can't the Autobots? So dumb. So the episode actually starts off pretty slow, but then the Dinobots start freaking out. They all got mental problems. And one of the Autobots saves our two main human characters, Spike and his dad, Sparkplug,
yep.
which both also just sound like Autobots. And he grabs...
I like how we made it 30 episodes in before you commented on that.
I must have known, but I just totally forgot. This whichever Autobot it is, I don't remember. He picks up the dad fairly normally. He kind of just wraps his arm around him and picks him up. But then the way he grabs... Spike is he grabs him around the back, his own back, the Autobot, and holds Spike against his own back. So he's got them both in front and behind him. It just looks very awkward.
It's just, it's like, it's, I describe it as, would you see a toddler pick up a cat and they yeah. hold them like hugging them, but yes. under the cat's arms.
That you said, have you ever seen a toddler yeah. hold a cat? That was very funny. Also, these are free on YouTube. Just look up, was it Dinobot Island?
Yep.
On YouTube, you can watch it for free. The moment we're talking about right now is that 5 minutes and 28 seconds into the first episode. If you're so interested in seeing the visual, if you have any interest in just insanely bad animation, there are moments that are quite good, actually. I didn't necessarily note those down, but there are moments with animation. It's highly entertaining, cheap 80s animation. If you have any interest in that, it's so much fun.
Or Transformers.
And talking about cheap animation, another my next moment is the Dinobots very conveniently transform behind a wall in one moment. on the opposite end of the spectrum, though, we see Grimlock transform a lot. And I feel like there's a funny spectrum in this show of literally impossible transformations that make no sense. My favorite being the one that can transform into a microscope, and he shrinks down to a normal-sized microscope as well. So there's ones that transform in impossible ways, and there's ones that clearly they tried their best to mimic whatever the toy is like. And I feel like that's what's wrong with Grimlock's animation, is he's really similar to a toy, but because what happens is when his chest opens up, it's just empty space.
It's
and, I hate it. And as long as we're talking about Grimlock, you pointed this out to me. Now that once I saw it, I could not unsee it. His little stumpy T-Rex arms are just on his back whenever he's in robot mode. And it's very unsettling. Okay, I have a lore question for you. I think this is every time we watch an episode, I have at least one lore question. So we have Soundwave.
Yes.
The one who transforms into a jukebox. He has a couple of little guys that are his little pals that transform into tapes and go into his chest. Laserbeak and Ravage.
And Rumble and Frenzy.
Why do they ever do that? What is the point of them going back into Soundwave? Is there a point? Like, does he
I just
like,
threw my hands up in a shrug. For
does the, he like mind meld with them? Because they often get used as like scouts.
Lore wise, they're like, I think, especially in G1, they are quite literally just little guys. They're called cassettes.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he's a cassette player and that carries on. But they're canonically just like little guys.
I would be very interested to see if there's a canonical like explanation beyond because he's a jukebox. Like, what is the purpose for them to go back inside of him? I doesn't seem to be a good reason.
Maybe it's like how those little fish attach to sharks.
Unless they are just like they're not just extensions of him, they are pieces of him that he needs back, potentially.
They're pretty much completely sentient, though.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that there is a reason, I would just like to know if there is one.
According to TF Wiki,
okay,
mini cassettes, also known as cassette warriors, infiltration troopers, or simply cassettes, are transformers whose alternate mode is an audio cassette. They can fit into the chest compartments of Blaster or Soundwave, and many characters have communication or espionage roles. Also, many of them are redecos. No idea what that is. That's it. They are just, in G1, they have their beast forms. They're treated like pets. They don't really speak. In some of the comics, they can speak. And then some of the more recent comics, they're very similar, where they're also like kind of pet-like, but they are sentient and talk. So it's like if Athena could fold up into my pocket and talk.
So this says, in the comics, they do not appear to have a particularly special or unique relationship with Soundwave, but he will release them from his chest for surprise attacks. There's a fairly reasonable...
pocket.
Doesn't explain why they would return to him, but that does explain why you would have that as a function.
Pocket cassette.
Yeah, it seems like this talks about them getting taken away, so that means that he could operate as normal without them, I would guess. So that seems to me like what might potentially be the best explanation is that they are part of him, so if he lost them, he'd be losing something. But I was just curious if you knew. Next on my list, and please feel free to intervene at any point if you have any notes around.
I took no notes.
Okay.
We're going off vibes tonight.
Okay. I need to find an example. Powerglide's weird laugh makes a lot of so Powerglide is a like almost like 1920s carnival barker. So he's like, "Hey, I'm the best ever, man. You know, you wanna come have a first flight?" He just would say something that's not funny, and then he would just go, "I hated him."
Laugh. It's funny.
I hate him.
Spike has the survival skills of a 2-week-old infant.
We'll get to that. That's not quite yet. That's okay. The second episode. Spike is the human boy, and he's not good at being on the island.
I can't tell. His character goes between like 15 and 27 sometimes. Yeah. You know what I mean? But he works construction, so he's probably at least an adult.
So they get to the island, and Spike says that's a lost world. Not so subtle reference to, you know.
Am I regretting? No.
No. No, okay, so I'm sure none of the characters' designs have changed. It finally occurred to me, so many of the Transformers do not have any peripheral vision because they just got crap poking out of their chests or their back that would 100% stop them from having any sort of peripheral vision whatsoever.
Michael Keaton, Batman.
They have to turn their entire body to see, yeah. Spike gets, to feed into your point, he has terrible survival skills. He gets kidnapped by a dinosaur, saved, and immediately kidnapped again.
Demorphodon, but is the 80s. I doubt they knew that existed at that point.
But my first note around that is that the eggs for the first dinosaur are bigger than the dinosaur itself.
Yeah. Hmm.
So how did those eggs come out of that dinosaur is a question.
Hmm.
But yeah, you want to talk about Spike's terrible survival skills?
So he gets rescued from the dinosaur nest, and... by Swoop, one of the Dinobots, who says, "Don't get in any more trouble," and first leaves him on this island. And the next scene, a plesiosaur comes out of the river, grabs him, and for the next 3 full 4 minutes, is like crocodile shaking him. He's fine, but they also take forever to rescue him.
And
I don't know
what. And so they save his skin twice, and then as he's leaving the island, he turns and says, "I'd write back to you, but you can't read." Whoa! Unnecessary shot at these poor men. These guys, they clearly have some sort of developmental disorder.
No.
It's not their fault.
No.
Making fun of the disabled kids over here.
No.
Not cool. Not cool. But that's a very funny moment.
It was just so uncalled for. I just don't think when they were built with full sentient capability. Because they speak in very, very poor sentence structure.
Yes. So I need to actually play the episode for this next bit. So it is... it'll be in my history. Here's my history.
They just act more like animals than the rest of the Transformers.
So twice... I'll play them both here. Twice, Optimus Prime just starts listing Autobots. You cannot have more than 2 Autobot names in a row. They're too ridiculous. Just listen to this.
"Connection, Optimus?"
"Indeed. Ironhide, Sunstricker, Sideswipe, Huffer, Hound, Trans..."
It's too many. It's too many ridiculous names. And then he does it again with, to my shock, I honestly would love if just like 20% of the episode was just him listing names.
We could probably find more episodes like that if we actually watched it.
"Strap on your jetpacks and
it's too late.
Disruption the damage to the time flow at once. Warpath, Beachcomber, Perceptor, Ironhide, Smokescreen, Trailbreaker. Strap on your jet.
How many was that?
Six.
And was it six different ones?
Mm-hmm.
He did like four or five the first time, mm-hmm. and then six ones?
I think there might have been a little bit of overlap.
Still hilarious. It's one of my favorite moments in the episode is him just listing the Autobots.
He's probably got them written on his hand.
So, yeah. That's good. Ironhide has a glue gun. Why did he never use that in the Bay movies? I'm mad we've not seen that in live action.
Could have put himself back together.
No! Okay, he didn't get ripped apart like Jazz did. He just got shot. So I don't think glue's going to fix a shot to the head.
Why did you have to bring Jazz into this?
Look, I think you got it confused.
Nope.
He's the one who got torn apart. Anyways.
You know how they fill cracks in like wood floors? They combine glue and dust. It's the same thing.
Yeah. To explain what I'm talking about, there's a moment where... Are they fighting the dinosaurs? Who, I can't remember who they're fighting.
The mammoths and the barbarians.
That's what it was, yes. Ironhide just has a gun that just releases just tons of sticky substance that I'm calling glue. And just it sticks in the ground. But it is so much. It is a bizarre weapon for this random space robot to have. Perceptor, was that the scientist one?
Yeah.
Turns into a microscope. A hilarious moment that not only does he turn into a microscope, he turns into a normal size microscope, which I guess, I don't know which one's more ridiculous. Him turning into a giant microscope, that would make more logical sense for the preservation of mass.
That's the comics.
But, are you serious?
Yeah.
Or him turning into one that a human, when I say normal size, one that a human can use. Yeah, the Pirates and Cowboys are ridiculous. They actually have multiple minutes in a row where there's no Transformers involved at all. It is just pirates commandeering a yacht and cowboys fighting modern bikers. And it is bizarre. Perceptor as a full-sized, Transformers-sized microscope.
Biblically accurate microscope.
The jetpacks show up again. The Decepticons just get totally wrecked by a bunch of dinosaurs. A very fun moment.
By
normal actual dinosaurs.
80s rendition dinosaurs.
Yes, true. They are very funny to look at. They're very goofy.
They look...
And to top it all off, someone says that they're going to turn the Decepticons into Decepticrumbs.
Lithium litter.
Something about lithium litter. Yep. So that's the episode.
Don't forget what they call the barbarians.
I don't remember. I didn't catch that, I guess.
Unwashed primitives.
Oh! How did I miss? I missed that. Yes, the best line.
What Autobot says that?
Yeah. Totally. They are... Everyone is out of pocket in this episode. Oh, also, Grimlock says to Megatron, what, you're evil and you're stupid
you're
too?
You're evil and you're ugly? or you're bad and you're
everyone
ugly?
Everyone just with the one-liners.
Catching strays.
Great. I'm so glad we watched this. This was a lot of fun.
You're welcome.
Still better than most of the Jurassic Park movies, probably. Like, is this the third best Jurassic Park movie?
This is the third best.
I mean, they go to an island. A stupid
There's a kid on
almost
the island.
Gets eaten. Yeah, they find a forced way to get a kid on the island.
Someone... abusing the natural resources for personal gain.
It's an ecological metaphor. It's not even a metaphor. Also, the stakes of this episode suddenly expand.
Oh, my goodness.
It goes from, we don't want the Decepticons to have Energon, and Optimus is like, they could destroy the whole galaxy. Huh?
Yeah, what? The whole Milky Way.
What is it? Is it because they could like cause like a wormhole?
I'm guessing that was the implication that it would just start tearing itself apart. It doesn't make sense though.
It feels no need to actually explain.
I feel like if I was in like Spike's shoes, I would probably be having an existential crisis like every single week.
There's too many ideas in this episode. You have the dinosaurs. You have the pirates. You have the cowboys. You have the wormhole.
The barbarians.
I feel like there was another. Oh, the mammoths. There's just too many things, and it's even in a 2-part episode, it takes way too long. But I loved it. This is some classic G1 shenanigans.
I think it was really funny because when they're on the island, it's like the volcano starts erupting and lightning flashes, and Starscream goes, "A bad omen." human. Like, what?
He suddenly becomes suspicious.
Yeah, very superstitious.
Oh, also, talking about Trek Classic G1, I should have kept track. A bunch of great PowerPoints. Also, not great PowerPoints, weird PowerPoints. My favorite one is at some point someone curves their elbow towards them, points, and points outward. So it creates it like squiggle with their arm. It was hysterical.
You had a really good impression of it. I'm not going to lie. Your arm looked like so super good. The bone in your arm looked genuinely in a C shape. I was kind of scared for you.
Oh, we got to do our check-in on the voice actors to see if there's anyone interesting in these episodes. Probably not. It's probably the standard actors.
Jazz had one line and one appearance in the second episode.
That's true. Let's see here. So Greg Berger is the voice of Grimlock.
Berger.
Is he anyone? It looks like he just... does just a lot of this voice acting. I guess we're specifically looking to see if he's ever done anything. I need to expand to see all. He's in Minecraft story mode as Oxblood. He was in the animated movie The Star, which is a nativity scene animated movie. He played Innkeeper number 3, which means he got to...
I'm pretty sure I remember watching that.
He got to turn away Joseph and Mary is what he got to do.
I'm pretty sure I got to watch that at church 1 year for Christmas.
That checks out. He is in a single episode of Star Wars Rebels as a character named Kalani. Let's take a look. Who is he? He's the tactical droid in Rebels, that one episode from Clone Wars.
What a weird connection.
That's when the clones have to team up with the droids to fight. That's a great episode.
That is a good episode. Who won the Clone Wars? No one did.
Everyone lost. Good stuff. Michael Bell is the voice of Prowl. Let's see if he was ever in a Star Wars.
The cop. He showed up like a cop, too.
Let's see here. Star Wars Force Commander as Tatooine Farmer.
Yeah.
He was also in Tales of the Underworld, sorry. Underworld. As Dock Worker.
We will have to watch at some point.
He was in Rebels as Slave Number 1 and General Dodonna.
No way.
Yeah.
Huh.
And General Dodonna is the guy with the gray beard from episode 4 who, like, lays out the Death Star plan. So he was in quite a few episodes of Rebels then, because he was reoccurring.
Yeah. Man.
There you go. You see, you just never know.
You get your small start in a couple episodes of Transformers 2-1, and then you end up in one of the biggest franchises, and two of the biggest franchises, technically
speaking. He was actually only in 4 episodes. That's funny. He also returned in various other Transformers. He was in Rescue Bots as High Tide and Newsreel Narrator.
I've actually heard Rescue Bots is really good.
And he was in the video game Transformers Devastation as Sideswipe and Scrapper. Let's see if he's in any other Transformers stuff. He also was in various other episodes of G1. Let's see. There was another more recent one that showed up for a second. Never mind. I didn't think to check the other, so Greg Berger, who was the voice of Grimlock, I didn't think to check other Transformers he might have been in. He was, voice of Grimlock in the video game. That makes sense. Yes, yes. Power of the Primes? Have you heard of this? This is a 10 episode, the miniseries.
I have. Wait, is that the one that just came out?
2018.
No. Okay. Oh, okay.
Will Wheaton, do you know who that is?
The name's familiar.
He is famous for being in Star Trek The Next Generation and playing himself on Big Bang Theory. He was Perceptor in that.
Oh, nice.
And Mark Hamill was Megatronus, and Ron Perlman was Optimus Primal. Was Ron Perlman also Optimus Primal in Rise of the Beasts?
Pretty sure.
The movie? Interesting. Anyways, we're way off topic now. I just thought that was interesting. Greg Barr played Grimlock in Volcanicus.
I don't know what that is, Cameron. You ask me a lot sometimes.
Look, sometimes you know. I don't know. I don't know what you don't know.
I don't know niche Transformers knowledge.
Okay. All right. Don't cut back to your whole explanation of, like, the politics of of that Megatron.
That might have been the episode that made my mom take like a 6-month break listening for the episode.
This is Volcanicus. This guy. He's very anime looking. He's got big old wings. Doesn't seem to have what he actually transforms into, though. He looks a lot like Voltron. Mm. Let's see. Anyone else? IMDb is bad now.
Now?
Look, it used to be good, but it got bought by Amazon. And yeah, he just plays Grimlock a lot. It is cool that the guy who originally played Grimlock is still playing Grimlock. That's pretty cool.
You want to voice Grimlock? Yes. Yes.
Scatman Crothers is Jazz. Absolute classic. Oh, so the original voice of Perceptor is Paul Eating. And he... Let's see if he's ever done anything. Let's take a look. Sorry, it's loading very slowly.
Not my Wi-Fi. Actually, it might be my Wi-Fi.
He was a few voices in the video game Star Wars Old Republic. Colonel Sinks, General Grain, and Officer Sarek. I never played that game. And let's see, was he in any? No. Okay, that's enough for today. Those are some good ones, though. This guy looks kind of interesting. The voice. Now, this has a different actor credited as Optimus Prime for this episode.
The credits said Peter Cullen.
This has to be a mistake, then. Because it has an actor named Hubert Gagnon as Optimus. That's his name, man. Hmm. I've actually never looked up the who played Bumblebee. His name is Dan Gilvezan. This is funny. In the 2002 Spider-Man the Movie video game, he played a character named Spike.
Seems purposeful.
Let's see what else he's been in. He also played Spider-Man 2099 in this video game, Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions, which is interesting because that's supposed to be a Hispanic character, and he doesn't look Hispanic. Hey, he's from Redacted City, on the other big city in our state on the east side. He's from there.
Someone's gonna Google.
Oh,
someone's gonna Google him and find it, Cameron.
That's true. I mean, look, if you had any desire to figure out where we're from, it would not take very long at all. I typed in Jurassic Park instead of Star Wars.
That's why I almost said Star Wars earlier instead.
No, you did. Okay. Okay, well, that was a fun little detour.
Brain rot.
Now it's time for Meme Minute, but it's longer than a minute, but is it longer than a meme parsec or a meme astroseconds? How many memes you got this week, Rachel?
5.
I might have 1 or 2.
I think you've seen all of them before. I snatched them from the DMs on Instagram.
Oh, okay. I think I have a couple saved ones. I think I have 2. Go ahead and show me one of yours.
This has context before I show it to you. So... the big topic of AI. You love it, you hate it. We're not going to get into the ethics, the pros and cons of it on this
let's do it right now.
Podcast. But
hour and a half into this podcast, let's do it.
There's been a meme of calling AI-generated stuff or AI softwares clankers. Which originally started as a slur, ?
No, it definitely is a slur.
Droids by the clones in Star Wars. And so people have started attributing it to AI stuff. Well, this is a very famous meme of someone tipping over a domino that tips over bigger and bigger and bigger dominoes. It says Dave Filoni writing Clone Wars, and he's about to knock it over. And the biggest one, Twitter discovers a slur for AI. Here, I'll show it to you. Because
that's so good.
I remember seeing comments where someone said, someone made a comment that was like, oh my goodness, someone created a slur for AI because they retweeted something that said clanker in it. And it had thousands of responses and they retweeted it and they said, so I've learned this is from Star Wars.
Yeah, I saw some sort of video that was like someone like smashing a robot with a chair or something, and it said something like, when my daughter tries to bring home her clinker girlfriend in 2015. Her
clinker boyfriend. I've seen that one.
So this is an image from Jurassic Park. Dude, it's fun to be done with Jurassic Park, but now it's like permanently like part of... we can just come bring it up at any time. It's the Velociraptor enclosure from the first movie, and after they've broken out, it just says, dude, Benton's gonna be so pissed. Oh, we both have it! It's the two main characters from Regular Show. Dude, Benton's gonna be so... It's always funny.
Benton's gonna be pissed.
Just put... it's Rigby and...
Mordecai.
Just put them in any situation saying this. It's always funny.
Exceptionally biblical name, and then a random guy name.
Yeah. I never even really watched Regular Show, but...
I remember watching it when it first came out. I think it just fell off for me after a while. Sure. But Mark Hamill's in it.
Of course he is. It's a cartoon from the 2000s. He's, of course, Mark Hamill's in it. What else you got?
You wish to go to Jurassic Park, but you realize you got sent to the novel version of Jurassic Park. There's a cat with very wide eyes and a very ominous dinosaur-shaped shadow in the background.
I like how collectively the internet has just decided to only depict Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park in black and
white. In black and white, yeah.
Yeah, it's very good. I like it a lot. I would be very interested at some point to see someone make a more faithful adaptation of the book.
Brother, you're telling me?
Like, I love that movie, and I don't think it needs to be remade, but I would like to see the book adapted. And you know what? It's been done before. The Shining is considered one of the greatest films ever made, and they still made a television series, like a miniseries that's an adaptation of the book. They did it with... Now, normally, not good. They did it with Total Recall... they did it with, there's another one. I can't think of it off the top of my head. It gets done. They try to make a more faithful adaptation of the book. It's not normally a very good idea, but it would be better than another. So that's the issue with the Jurassic Park movies as they are, is they're too beholden to trying to be that first film. Do not try to remake a Steven Spielberg film. I mean, don't try to beat Spielberg at his own game, is what I'm saying.
I think you
remake
can.
The movie in a different style, i.e. the book. Now, you would need to still make some creative liberties because that book is not perfect and would not make an amazing movie. Specifically, the last, like, 20 pages would need to be kind of reworked. If anything, just put that scene earlier. I don't know if we need a full episode, but this would be fun to talk about how you would adapt that into a movie. I would think you would need to move. My argument I'm making for is the final sequence where they're down in the cave with the velociraptors could be good, but it's too late in the book. It needs to be earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, back to memes. 7-year-old me using my parents' toothpaste instead of my strawberry one. It's Grimlock from Age of Extinction transforming. And then he breathes fire. I mean, toothpaste, when you're a kid, you're not used to it. Normal toothpaste is spicy.
I feel like for a while my dad was on a stint where he used the brown Listerine.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Listerine, the mouthwash.
I know that, like
yeah,
brown?
Yeah, there's like a brown color. There's like a gold.
What flavor? Like, is it a flavor?
Yeah, I mean, I never tried it. I hated Listerine. It made my mouth burn too hard.
Antiseptic mouthwash original.
Something like that. I mean, there is. I hated
Listerine. Oh, wow. Oh, it's like gold.
Yeah.
It's like the original is what it says.
I hated Listerine. It
so
made
it
my
probably
mouth
doesn't have
so
any
bad.
Flavoring at all, and
no,
it's probably more
bad.
Intense.
I feel like if I had to describe it now, it's probably just straight whiskey.
Oh, my gosh. It is based on the original formula that was used to disinfect surgery instruments.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yep.
And then later marketed as a cold cure and to treat infectious dandruff. Yeah, take a swig of this.
Gasoline.
This will take the paint off of a house.
Clear sinuses.
That'll freshen you up. What else you got?
This is a Godzilla X Kong meme. Behemoth's hiding place. Entrance hidden by Christ the Redeemer. Behemoth. Fan. Air vent.
We're back here.
This is another Saddam Hussein hiding place meme, but it's talking about how Godzilla X Kong took place in
Rio de Janeiro.
Yes, thank you. Rio de Janeiro, where Behemoth, one of the other Titans, lives. And so, it lives there. And so the question is, Behemoth where just is didn't he? Show up.
That's funny. I thought it was, I joke about him not showing up, but I thought it was just a joke about him not having shown up at all since he appeared.
No, that's where he lives. That's he lives funny. In the forest.
Wow. That's good. I love it. This is my final video.
Oh, nice.
When you're a droid in most likely Cantina just trying to get down, but everyone hates you, and they're just whacking the crap out of this robot that's dancing. It's a great joke about the droid racism. Just like they're throwing balls at this robot. They're hitting him with a big stick, and he just keeps on dancing. Right. That was funny.
Here's my last one. Snowmen after you leave them basking in the sun for a few hours, and it's Godzilla minus one sinking into the ocean after getting blown up.
That's good. I'm just going to quickly check to see if I have any memes that I missed. Let's see. There's me and Peanut. There's Peanut.
Peanut.
There's Peanut. A lot of Peanut photos and videos. Oh, this is not obligatory, not a meme, but I was trying to say that was the last thing that I wanted in a text, and I accidentally wrote, that's the L-A-A-T thing that I wanted. And if you don't know, the clone gunships from Star Wars are L-A-A-T gunships.
Oh, I sent you that. It's not a meme, but...
obligatory, not a meme.
Godzilla.com is selling... I have a figure from Bandai of Godzilla Minus One. Thank you to my brother and sister-in-law for buying that for me for Christmas.
Very nice.
And along with the DVD, well, they made a gold version reminiscent of the ones they brought with them to the Oscars, the team. Like figurine of Godzilla minus one.
Oh, very good. That's fun. That's super fun.
I want to buy it.
Yeah.
It's $32.
Thank you for joining us, listeners. Next time on the pod, who knows? Oh, I just remembered the piece of news. It's 11 months old.
You should cut the episode right now after I remember.
I haven't done the proper closing yet. That would be funny, though. Also, don't tell Athena how to edit the podcast. How dare you?
You tell her to do that all the time.
I will. If there's one other thing other than facts I won't let get in the way of comedy, it's consistency. How did I come across this? I don't remember how I think there was a slight update on this. 11 months ago, we got the title drop in synopsis of the next Laika stop motion movie.
Interesting.
So Laika, they made Coraline, they made Paranorman, they made what's the Bigfoot one?
Are they Isle of
Isle of Dogs is a different company. Love Isle of Dogs. They made Box Trolls, which I've not seen. They made
Missing Link.
Missing Link, which I love. I think it's extremely underrated. So they have two connections to Rebels and Robots. They did one of Vision Season 2, mm-hmm. the really, really good stop motion one. And they also, Trevor Knight, I think is his name, who directed Bumblebee, came mm-hmm. from Laika. And he's directing the next Laika one as well. It comes out sometime next year. So this, we're very late on this. We somehow missed it. It's just exciting. Like, I love everyone I have seen of them. Coraline especially is one of the best movies. Oh, Coraline rules. We might have to do maybe a Laika month leading up to. So the next one, after look, I did not write down, and that's why I couldn't remember it. Laika movie 2026. Wildwood. It's an adaptation of a book. It will have what is now a Jurassic World alumni, Mahershala Ali, who was in the new one, is going to do a voice. Jacob Tremblay, Carey Mulligan, Charlie Day, Awkwafina, Angela Bassett, though.
Oh, okay.
Got delayed. That's what the headline was. But that was from 3 months ago. So we've missed a lot of news on this. I'm super excited. I really, really love the Laika stuff. It's cool that Travis Knight. Oh, that was the other one I was missing. The one that Travis Knight did actually direct himself was Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yes.
Which I have mixed feelings on, but no matter how you feel about the narratives in any of them, they look incredible. Like, seriously, magnificently made. It was, Paranorman was the one that made me realize what's amazing about stop motion and claymation is that the characters literally exist. Like, yes, they're not alive, like an actor, but the getting to deal with real lighting, because that's the issue with animation, is you're constantly trying to replicate lighting, which is impossible to do fully. Lighting is too complicated. Mm-hmm. With stop motion, you have the beautiful thing of you're working with real lights and real cameras. So they're made like... honestly, stop motion, you have the most difficult parts of both sides. You have the most difficult part of animation because you have to create everything. And you have a difficult part of real life because you're having to deal with cameras and in the physical limitations. Like, stop motion is so difficult that anyone that tries to do it, they almost always do an incredible job. I've never seen a stop motion film that didn't look amazing. It is a true art form that just the act of creating a stop motion thing itself, to me, is almost always incredible. The year that, what is it called? Coraline came out. Also, the stop-motion Australian film Mary and Max came out. I think they're both in my top four for that year. Two stop-motion movies in the same year.
Nice.
Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of my favorite movies from that year. Isle of Dogs, consistently stop-motion films when they come out are some of my favorite of each year. Super excited for this film. I don't know anything about it, but the fact that it's Laika, yeah, it's going to be good. So, nice. Yeah. So I think that's one we'll probably want to cover next year if it comes out. We'll see. Yeah, so that was the bit of news that I forgot up top. As always, thank you to Caleb Jacoby for our intro and outro music. And props to Rachel for driving me to get Chick-fil-A before.
You're welcome. I also got myself Chick-fil-A. We didn't just get Cameron Chick-fil-A.
And thank you to Athena, always. Also, update. I'm just going to give up on the Facebook. I'll keep the Instagram going for now. I don't know if it's just worth the effort. I can put the effort elsewhere. I like the idea of posting other things other than just the podcast thumbnail every week, but I'm just too lazy. maybe someday. I like the idea of making memes and posting them, but I just don't have the motivation, I guess. Mm-hmm. But thank you for running the Twitter at Rebels and Robots Pod.
I retweet a lot of stuff, and
yeah.
I make memes that I think are funny, but I don't...
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Let us know if you watch these episodes. Let us know if you've gotten around to watching Jurassic World Rebirth. Be curious to hear what people think of it. Your mom sent in the our group chat...
Yeah, my mom made a group chat.
I feel very good to be... And it's called Rebels and Robots, which is a lot of fun. It's a book, Dinosaurs by Design... And I'm guessing this is just a dinosaur book, but my immediate reaction to that title is that it's a creationist book about dinosaurs.
You might be right.
Let's take a look. What is Dinosaurs by Design about? Dinosaurs by Design book.
Skinny.
Oh, I was right.
Skinny Athena.
Oh. Discusses the origins, characteristics, habits, and fate of dinosaurs. Also includes biblical references to these creatures. Published in 1993.
Yeah.
It came out 2 months before Jurassic Park. So for those of you who are interested in a creationist perspective on dinosaurs, check out...
If you know me in real life, I'll show you a picture of my grandma.